several years ago, Chicago Cubs, they had a pitcher, Bob Patterson. Where's Doug? You know Bob? Okay. So Bob Patterson, he pitched a pitch. Cincinnati Reds' Barry Larkin hit the pitch for a game-winning home run. Later on, he was asked to describe the pitch that he threw to Barry Larkin. And he says, well, it was a cross between a screwball and a changeup. He calls it a screw-up. Well, today we're going to talk about Moses' screw-up. Last week we talked about Moses. As a baby, in this miraculous deliverance by God, Pharaoh's daughter, the daughter of the man who ordered all Hebrew boys to be thrown into the Nile River, she finds a baby in a basket. And she knew he was a Hebrew. But she had compassion on him. And she adopted the baby as her own. And the results, we talked about this last week, the results, this is in Acts chapter 7, verse 22. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. Now, I would have shared this with you last week, but I just found it this week. Chuck Swindoll, he writes, Moses probably went to the school of the Temple of the Sun, where all the privileged boys went. Archaeologists and historians have called it the Oxford of the ancient world. There he would have learned hieroglyphics, science, medicine, astronomy, chemistry, theology, philosophy, and law. He would have studied the great literatures of his day, and he would have dabbled in the arts and sculpture and music and painting. And more than that, Moses would have also studied the battles and combat strategies of the nation's proud military history. So he would have had a well-rounded education. Acts 7 says he became powerful in speech and action. And then I found this, which I thought was very interesting. Josephus, which is a great Jewish historian, he says that after Moses grew up, he led the Egyptian army to a great victory over the Ethiopians who had invaded Egypt. Previously, the Egyptian army had fled before the Ethiopians. But when Moses took over as general, the Egyptians experienced one victory after another. They were able to rout the Ethiopians and overthrow the cities, and what Josephus says, indeed made a great slaughter of the Ethiopians. So this is Moses. Don't find that in the Bible, but that's Josephus, a great historian. He says this is who Moses is. Well, we get to our text today in Hebrews chapter 2. In Hebrews 2, we're going to pick it up at verse 11. And this is what it says. It says, one day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were, and he watched them at their hard labor. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. So we're at the point now where Moses, he's all grown up. In Acts 7, once again, Acts 7, Stephen, he says Moses was 40 years old at this time, and he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. Moses, he's all grown up, 40 years old, highly educated, a very successful warrior, a natural-born leader, and he looks great, and he speaks great, and he is great, and he's confident in his own abilities, and he's concerned about his people. Exodus 2 tells us he watched his people doing hard labor, and he sees this Egyptian. He sees this mean Egyptian, this taskmaster. And what's he saying? This Egyptian, he's beating one of his fellow Hebrews. So he sees this Egyptian. It says Moses watched. Hebrews 11, let me throw in Hebrews 11 here for you. Hebrews 11, verse 24, it says, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. It seems like this is about the time where Moses was crossing over from being an Egyptian to being a Hebrew. He says, these are not my people, these are my people. I relate to these people. I want to be with these people. I want to help these people. So he begins to identify with them, and he's concerned about them. And it says he watched. He watched the oppression. He watched the injustice. He saw a need. He wanted to help. And after delivering the Egyptians from the Ethiopians, now he's trying to deliver a Hebrew from an Egyptian. So he steps in to begin Operation Rescue. an operation he made up in his own mind. And he's saying, this is my life purpose. This is why I was born. This is why I was miraculously saved and pulled out of the Nile River. He watches. He wants to help. And then what does it say? Verse 12 says, he glanced this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed that Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Moses killed an Egyptian. He looked to see. You see what's going on? He looked to see if anybody was watching. Now, what's that mean? To look to see if anybody's watching, this is premeditated murder. And then not only was it premeditated murder, he covered it up. He hid the body. This is Moses we're talking about. And if you didn't know that, I mean, this kind of breaks your heart. I mean, because he's God's man. And we find out that God's man is a sinner. Then the story continues. The next day, he went out and he saw two Hebrews fighting. And he asked the one in the wrong, he says, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? So we leave the Egyptian now, and now we're focused on these two Hebrews. And what do you see? Moses confronts them. Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? And you know what the man said? This is what it says in verse 14. The man said, who made you ruler and judge over us? Who died and made you boss? Hey, he says, are you thinking of killing me as you killed that Egyptian? What? How do you know about that? Who else knows about this? So Moses is kind of freaking out here. In another verse in Acts chapter 7, if you read about Moses in Exodus chapter, well, the whole book of Exodus, in Acts chapter 7, Stephen tells a story about Moses, and you also see some things in Hebrews. But I keep on going back to Acts chapter 7. This is what it says in Acts chapter 7, verse 25. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them. But they did not. They didn't want his help. First of all, he's an Egyptian. He's one of them. They don't recognize him as a brother. And secondly, look at what he does. He goes out and kills people. That's the kind of help that we want? Is that the kind of help that we need? You're going to kill me too like you killed the Egyptian? Well, then Moses was afraid. And he thought, what I did must have become known. And in verse 15, it says that when Pharaoh heard of this, so Pharaoh knew that he killed somebody, Pharaoh tried to kill Moses. So Moses runs from Pharaoh. He fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian. By the way, Midian is closer to the land of Canaan than it is to Egypt. So he goes east. He runs east. Moses runs because Pharaoh's out to kill him. Moses fled from Pharaoh. Moses has failed. He failed to help. All he's trying to do is rescue his people, help his people. And he failed miserably and probably made matters worse. And the question, why? Why did Moses fail? What's going on here? Could it be because he was too busy glancing this way and that, looking left and looking right, instead of looking up? Could it be that he was trying to do what he's trying to do something noble? He's trying to rescue his people, but he was trying to do it in his strength. He was trying to do it in the flesh. He wasn't doing it in the power of God or in the timing of God or by the will of God. So here's the problem. The problem with gifted people, if you are a gifted person, here's the problem. The problem with gifted people are they are self-confident. They are self-reliant. They are independent thinkers. And all these things, we think these are noble things, to be reliant, to be confident, to be independent, doing what's right in your own eyes. So Moses, his motivation was right, but his method and his timing, they were all wrong. And he was rejected. He was ratted out. He was in danger of losing his life, and he runs away. And Chuck Swindoll, he says, at this point, Moses found himself highly qualified to be completely useless. Have you been there before? I'm a nobody. Moses runs to the desert, away from the people he cared about, where the only thing he can effectively lead is a bunch of stupid sheep. So now we find him in Midian. He's left Egypt. He's in Midian. He's out in the desert someplace. And then we pick up the story, verse 15. Moses fled from Pharaoh, went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Verse 16. Now a priest of Midian had seven daughters. And they came to draw water. and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. And some shepherds came along and they drove them away. But Moses got up and he came to their rescue and he watered their flocks. So we find him, these seven Midians, these foreigners, these daughters of Reuel, Jethro, okay, yeah. I can't say his other name. But he's there and he rescues these seven girls from a bunch of rowdy shepherds. Once again, this is the character of Moses. This is what we see about Moses. Moses, he doesn't like what he sees. And he just couldn't look the other way. So he uses his strength, he uses his talents to enforce the policy of ladies first. He's protecting these ladies. In verse 18, when the girls returned to Reuel, weird name, Bob, we're going to call him Bob. When the girls returned to Bob, their fathers, he asked them, why have you returned so early today? Apparently, because, I mean, they always come home late. They always come home late because this happens to them on a daily basis, apparently. And so he says, why are you home so early? And they answered, an Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered our flocks. Notice the girl says an Egyptian rescued them, not a Hebrew. So I'm thinking Moses still looks like and he still smells like and still speaks like and still behaves like an Egyptian at this point. They recognize him as an Egyptian. Well, the father says, where is he? He asked his daughters, why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat. And Moses agreed to stay with the man and he gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. Zipporah gave birth to a son. So now Moses, he's married, he has a baby. Moses names his son Gershom, saying, I have become an alien in a foreign land. And I see this as being the low point in Moses' life right here. He used to be a somebody. And now look at where he's at in life. He's living out in the middle of a desert. He's been shunned by his people. Can't help anybody. What a wasted life. So Moses would spend the next 40 years here in the desert, in Midian. The first 40 years, according to Acts chapter 7, he was 40 years old when he was all grown up. The first 40 years, God taught Moses how to govern a great nation, gave him a great education, great schooling, showed him the finer things in life, first 40 years. The second 40 years, God would let Moses wander in the wilderness to teach him how to depend on God. And it would take 40 years to get Egypt out of Moses. Dwight Moody, he says Moses spent the first 40 years thinking he was a somebody. He spent the second 40 years learning he was a nobody. And he spent the last 40 years, which we're going to talk about next week, I guess, last 40 years discovering what God can do with a nobody. So I'll tell you the whole story to think, have you had a wilderness experience before? Where you get sent out to a desert someplace, and maybe you got fired from a job, or death of a loved one, or an ailing family member, or maybe you have some incurable disease, and you've had it. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and there's nothing they can do about it. Or maybe you have a rebellious child. Or a bad marriage, or you went through a bad divorce. I'm thinking most all of us can relate to something here, and you're going through this time. And some of us, I mean, it's a week, maybe just a month, but you know, some of us, it goes on for years. It goes on for years, and where is God in all this? Has He forgotten me? Does He even care? What is His will? Why is He putting me through this misery, this suffering? What is going on? This is Moses right here. Moses is out there in the desert every day. Why, God, why? I was trying to help somebody. And this is what happens? Why was I born? Why was I even pulled out of the Nile? Why would you do that? If this is how my life's going to end, what a waste. So I'm asking, can you relate to that? You've been there before, you are there right now, and you're thinking, what a waste. My life is a waste. Can this be God's will? What is God's purpose in this wilderness that you're experiencing right now, when you're lonely, when everything around you is foreign to you, when you have concluded you are a nobody, when nothing is easy, it used to be easy, nothing's easy anymore. Where is God in all this? And so I thought about that question a lot this week because I know we all go through it at some point. And I know some people are in it right now. And so I'm desperately crying out to the Lord, Lord, give me an answer. Why do we do this? Why do we go through this? And I read a verse earlier this week, and I want to come back to this verse, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 2. Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the desert for these 40 years? Now, this is actually talking, this is to come to the people that Moses is going to lead out of Egypt into the promised land. This was written to them, but it applies to Moses too, because Moses was in the desert for 40 years. Before he led other people into the desert for 40 years, he was there for 40 years. Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the desert these 40 years to humble you and to test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands. See, I think that's what's going on with Moses right now. I think it's what went on with the Israelites when they left Egypt. And I wonder if this is not what we're going through right now. God is testing us. He's testing to see what's in our hearts. He's humbling us so that we become dependent on him and him alone, and we would obey him, and we would keep his commands, and we would follow him. So this happens to see, will we depend on God? Will we stop looking to the right and left and start looking up? Will we start doing his will and not our own will? Will we start doing God's will his way and not our way? Will you stop living by your flesh and start living by the Spirit? This is a training ground. This is a boot camp for God to get us to fall on our knees, to depend wholly on him. That's what your wilderness experience is all about. And I want to say, I'm sorry you're going through it, but I'm not sure if I am sorry that you're going through it, because something great can happen in the middle. It's kind of like a cocoon for a moth. You know, they turn into a butterfly, but it's a struggle to get there. And you're in that cocoon right now, and God's making something beautiful. God's making something beautiful. So you got to trust him. And you got to know, you got to understand, on the other side, it's going to be okay. God will be with you, and God has perfected you. God has made you into what he wants you to be. So I'm thinking about Moses. Did it work for Moses? These 40 years, he's out there wandering in the wilderness. Did it work? And I found a verse in Numbers chapter 12, verse 3, which describes Moses as a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. And when I look at the word humble, what that implies to me, he humbled himself before God. Something that each one of us, we really need to do that on a daily basis. Humble ourselves before God, which means fall on our knees and depend upon him. Rely on him. Be faithful to him. Be obedient to him. So have you humbled yourself before God? If you're in the wilderness right now, I believe this is what it's about. That's what it's about. God wants to, he wants to sweetly break you and mold you to be the person he's calling you to be. So, okay, I want to go back to Egypt now. This is the back page of the outline. Let me finish up the story here. Exodus chapter 2, verse 23. During that long period, during 40 years of Moses being raising sheep out in Midian, during that long period of time, what happens? What happens back in Egypt? The king died. And the Israelites groaned in their slavery, and they cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. So Pharaoh died. The Israelites cried. And then it goes on, God heard their groanings, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Pharaoh died. The Israelites cried. They didn't cry because Pharaoh died. They cried because of their suffering, because of their pain, because of their misery. So they're crying out to God, and God hears. And God remembers. He remembers the covenant he made with Abraham. And it says he was concerned about them. And what you need to see, what you need to understand, God is at work. God is working. He's preparing to fulfill his promises and his purposes. And we're going to talk about that next week, not now. But, okay, so I'll tell you this whole story, Exodus chapter 2. This story of what was going on with Moses. And I'm looking for an application here. I came up with a couple things here. First of all, I want to encourage you, don't let your past failures discourage you. Don't we all fail? That's our education, isn't it? We're supposed to learn from our failures. So don't be discouraged. Don't be stopped. Don't let Satan stop you from serving God just because you fell down a couple times. But at the same time, I'm saying the flip side of that: don't let your successes fool you. Don't let your past give you a false sense of security and confidence where you think you're all that. Because I'm thinking Moses could have done that, right? I mean, he was a successful military warrior. So naturally, he just thinks he can save and protect anybody he wants to. And then he realizes he can't. He can't. So your past doesn't determine who you are. And not your past failures, not your past successes. Don't let your past failures discourage you. Don't let your past successes fool you. Secondly, be faithful in the small things. Moses set out to help his Hebrew brothers, to rescue his Hebrew brothers, but they'd had none of it. They didn't want anything to do with that. So when Moses couldn't do what he set out to do, he rescued some foreign ladies in distress instead. He didn't turn the other way. He didn't say, that's not my problem. He didn't say, why bother? They'll probably reject me as well. No, he did the right thing where he could do the right thing. So just because you fail at one place, you're trying to do the right thing, but for some reason you're stopped, don't stop doing the right thing. Keep doing the right thing. Keep being faithful in the small things. Moses did the right thing. He used his talents and his gifts to help who he could help. In Matthew Henry, he says, when we cannot do the good we would, we must be ready to do the good we can. And just accept this is the will of God. Yes, I want to save the world, but I can't save the world. Well, maybe I can save one. Pharaoh's daughter, she couldn't save all the Hebrews, but she saved one Hebrew. Moses, he couldn't save the Hebrews, but he could save seven Midian girls. You might not do all that you want to do, but you can do something. So be faithful in the small things. I like how Oswald Avery, he says, when you fall, pick something up. Think about that. That's really profound there. Moses had been knocked down. He has fallen. He's been rejected by his Hebrew brothers. What do you think he can pick up from this defeat? What do you think he can learn from this? What do you think we can learn when we fall down, when we fail? Surely there's something that we can pick up from this. And third, and most importantly at this point in the life of Moses, and I think I could preach on this every week, we need to learn to wait upon the Lord. Let me give you a couple verses here. Isaiah 40, verse 31, you know this one. But those who wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Wait upon the Lord. Psalm 121 says this, I lift up my eyes to the hills. I'm not looking left. I'm not looking right. I'm looking up. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of the heavens and the earth. Stop looking all around you. Start looking up. John 15:5. I am the vine, you are the branches. This is what Jesus says. I'm the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me, if a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. And isn't this the lesson that Moses had learned? He was doing it in his strength. He wasn't doing it in God's strength. He wasn't depending on God. He wasn't listening to God. He was doing what was right in his own eyes. Apart from Christ, we can do nothing. Is the lesson, God is capable of working for us and in us, in spite of us, if we would trust in him, if we would remain in him, if we would wait upon him. Let me remind you of the disciples here. The disciples who had followed Jesus for 3 years, learning learning all that Jesus was teaching them. They had been sent out to preach the good news. They had been used to deliver people from demons, to heal the sick. They were already doing that. And then one night, Jesus was arrested. They didn't see that coming. And he was tried in the middle of the night. And he was sentenced to death. And they executed Jesus. And these disciples, they were, oh my gosh. I mean, they just got thrown into a wilderness. A foreign world from where they had been for the past 3 years. Hopeless. Why bother? It was all for nothing. What a waste of time. And then that Sunday, Jesus rose from the dead. What the disciples didn't understand was that the cross was part of God's plan, which unleashed the Holy Spirit, which unleashed the power of God. And then just a few days later, Pentecost, just a few days later, and Peter is preaching to 3,000, and 3,000 people get saved that day. They give their life to the Lord that day. What a difference it makes when we wait upon the Lord. When we do it His way instead of our way. When we learn that apart from Christ, we can do nothing.